Good morning, friends. We've been journeying through Lent in John. We've been paying attention to Jesus mostly last evening with the disciples. And I have a confession, full disclosure. This picture is misleading for John 17, where we're at, because they've left the upper room. So I apologize for the misleading. The reason I chose to use it was because I wanted this sense of Jesus' care and the gathering of his disciples, and a picture painted of people walking single file or two by two at night through a garden just isn't as emotive. So there's my confession to begin the night with, or the morning with, that if you're looking for historical accuracy, this is not the painting. You probably figured that out already. But I did want us to think about the kind of space that Jesus and the disciples are in as they're spending this evening together. It's intimate, it's joined, it's emotional, it's connected. I wanted to start with us having that picture in our mind. I also wanted to step back and just remember a couple things we've talked about over the last couple weeks, because they seem important to us thinking about what's happening here in John 17. I've made the joke when Becky was here. Some of you remember Becky talking about not being affirmed, like that we need to allow God to affirm us. So I affirmed her sermon and then said, don't listen to that because, you're not supposed to be affirmed, right? And she laughed and said, no, that's not really what I meant. But she talked about this idea of cosmos. You guys remember this, the Greek word cosmos? And that it's important to understand when Jesus talks about what's going on in the world, like the world won't love you, the godless world this, the godless world that, that the Greek term that's being used here is cosmos. It's order. It's how things are connected together. And when we talk about the godless world, the cosmos of that, the order of that, is a system of power, right? It's a political system. It's an economic system. It's an institutional system. So what Jesus is talking about us resisting here are systems of power that aren't based on what God is doing. That makes sense? Everybody tracking with that? And I think most of us think chaos, the opposite of cosmos, is kind of a bad deal. So anarchists, you can meet in the lobby afterwards and figure out how you're going to do things and not be anarchists anymore once you have a plan. But most of us think chaos is unhelpful. But I think the point of what Becky was trying to bring here and say, at least in part, is that cosmos, order as security, rather than vulnerability and faithfulness to what God is doing, stands in the way of us being truly faithful. I think this is what Jesus is talking about here in chapter 15. Sammy followed up on that last week with the idea we have to release our preconceptions. I felt like this meme kind of summed up what Sammy said. My understanding of God and the universe could be wrong. It's important for us to remember that we can't make assumptions about what God wants to happen in the world. Like, we actually have to keep on listening to what God is saying. And it's important that we not continue to make assumptions about what we think or think about who God is. We continue to listen in relationship. So we come to John 17 with this sort of being the setup. And in John 17, there's this prayer. I mean, basically all of John 17 is Jesus praying for the disciples. And in some ways, John 17 is a very complicated chapter. There's a lot of theological work going on here. John is saying a lot of important things in this prayer. And some of the commentators mention that this is important to notice that Jesus is praying out loud with his disciples here, because Jesus already has said, I don't have to pray out loud to be heard. Right? This has happened earlier. So Jesus is praying out loud with a purpose, and I think part of Jesus' purpose is for his disciples to hear what he's praying. He's doing some teaching through his prayer. It's also a very immediate prayer, and maybe this is part of the teaching. He's addressing God as Father through all of this. There's this very immediate sense of Jesus is expecting God to be responding and present to what he's saying. And he's reaffirming what the situation is here. Jesus was sent in unison and obedience to God's intention to set the world right. And Jesus is confirming in this prayer that he's done this. And now he's passing on that responsibility to the disciples, both to those in the room and those who will believe the witness of those original disciples, which would be us. So hear this from John 17:21 through 23. The goal is for all of them, disciples, to become one heart and mind, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, so they might be one heart and mind with us. Then the world might believe that you, in fact, sent me. The same glory you gave me, I gave them, so they'll be as unified and together as we are. I in them and you in me. Then they'll be mature in oneness and give the God this world evidence that you've sent me and loved them in the same way you've loved me. This is the core of Jesus' message. We're hearing it over and over again in the last month. We're called to remain in Jesus, to abide in Jesus. I ran across this slide this week with all these antonyms of abiding. And I thought they were super interesting. To stop, resist, pass, quit, depart, go, leave, move, refuse, reject. That's what it means to not abide. Abide's on the other side of that. To go, to accept. To hang out, to make Jesus love our home, to use Jesus' language in John. And we're guided by that. The intention is that our joy might be complete, as Jesus says, that our experience of life is as God intends, and bigger yet, that all of creation might be brought back to the knowledge and fullness of God. So how does this interact with what Jesus talks about the godless world? Again, Becky's word that she brought, the Greek word cosmos, these systems of order and harmony, at least in theory. But the problem with these systems is they are very often not God-centered. So let's just take a moment to consider some of these systems. We use systems and benefit from systems, whether they're economic or cultural or governmental. And we often so get accustomed to these systems that we feel entitled to them. We're blind to our place in them. Or we're blind to the ways that these systems exclude or marginalize others. And Jesus calls us really clearly here to not put our trust in these systems or our trust in our reactions to them, but instead in Jesus. Systems often perpetuate the way that we encounter the world with a type of injustice that Jesus is trying to eliminate, that Jesus is trying to change. I think we often hold on to systems and ways of existing because it brings us security. We understand how it works. We understand what our place is in that system. Now, I want to say, as an aside, that we are beginning to understand that as humans, having some sense of security is kind of important to us. This is Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and I know some of you know more about this and more about psychology than I do, and that maybe people have learned more since Maslow. But Maslow has this idea that this pyramid builds, right? So if we don't have our physiological needs, if we can't breathe, or we don't have air or water, or a place to sleep or clothing, we're not going to be worried about much beyond that. That's sort of the nature of being a physical being. These things need to be met, and we're not going to think beyond those needs until they are. And you keep on moving up, and these become more and more abstract. So I want to suggest that we can't simply say that we don't need to have security, right? Some sense of some place to stand and what our basic needs being met are part of what it means to be a physical being. But I think what Jesus is suggesting is that in Jesus' call to our faithfulness, these things will be met. Does that make sense? That as we're faithful, we can have security in that relationship with Christ. And I wonder if we stop and think, if everybody was faithful to what God is doing, do we believe that the oppression and violence in our world would continue? Or do we believe that as we're faithful to what God is calling us to, that maybe God's way of working through us would transform the world? This comes back to a trust issue, and I'll come back to that in a moment. I also want to suggest that systems can become entangled with our way of thinking about God. That when we start talking about the godless world or the false cosmos, the false ordering of things, that as people who follow Jesus, we're not exempt from making the mistake of developing systems that keep us secure. This has been something that's been around almost from the beginning of Christianity. How many people know the name Constantine? Are you guys familiar with Constantine, Roman emperor? Okay. And Constantine has a vision at a bridge where he's fighting a battle. It's a civil war within the Roman Empire. It's starting to feel a lot like a Star Wars plot line. He's fighting this battle at a bridge, and he sees a vision of the cross, and he interprets and hears the words, "In this sign, prevail." And he goes on to prevail. Part of what happens to the Roman Empire and Christianity at that point is they become the same entity, at least in Rome. So Christianity becomes the religion of the state, and all of a sudden it also takes on looking a lot more Roman and a less bit like Jesus. This is early on, folks, in our history. This is entanglement. And so as we think about systems, we have to keep on remembering to go back to Jesus. Right? We have to keep on reminding ourselves that our institutional systems and the systems that we trust in may be guiding us away from what Jesus is actually calling us to. And it's really difficult to disentangle ourselves. Today's Palm Sunday. Triumphant entry happens today. And I think we might make the suggestion that some of the folks here on the original Palm Sunday are assuming that Jesus is coming to bring about a new political system. Right? We forget this in hindsight, that this talk of Messiah often meant king. And so for some of these folks, we're talking about the overthrow of the oppression of the Roman government. They assumed that this was about political and nationalistic power. And yet there's this really stark contrast between that hope and what Jesus is doing. How Jesus understood the triumphal entry. So we have a lot of work to do to undo this way of looking at the world. That we're not here to acquire power, but to reframe how we approach life. To reject that security is found in political power or self-preservation, but instead to trust God's guidance in obedience to whatever end that might lead to. So this idea of cosmos, of order, it's built on the harmony of the world. Right? We talk about this concept about being in harmony. And the more you study this stuff, the more you find out this isn't just metaphorical. The world literally runs on vibrations. Maybe some of you have seen, there's a guy who's an artist who's colorblind. He can't see color. And he's got this thing installed on his head that allows the vibration of the color to be picked up and then translated to color in his mind. Like, literally everything is vibrating. So if we had the capacity to hear it, we could hear, as we talk about in the hymn, the music of the spheres. And there's harmony that we find in the way things work. That's as smart as I am about that. So, but I found this quote from the Archbishop of Seville, Isidore, the Archbishop of Seville. He's also the patron saint of computing and the internet. He lived in the 6th century, so I don't know how he got to be the patron saint of those things, but he says this: "And without music, there can be no perfect knowledge, for there is nothing without it. For even the universe itself is said to have been put together with a certain harmony of sounds, and the very heavens revolve under the guidance of harmony." I love that picture, that things, you know, it gives us such a great, maybe more than metaphor, about the way harmony works, and maybe the way that discord works within our world. That as things are aligned as they're meant to be, as God intends them, there's actually literally harmony happening. We, and by we I mean most of humanity throughout history, have strived for order through systems. And I do want to say as an aside that we have to have systems of governance. But to remember that the system is the means, not the end. It's a tool and not the result. Anybody can make bad music on a beautiful instrument, and a good player can sound bad on a terrible instrument. We have a tendency to forget that these systems that we use to try to create harmony in the world are tools to an end. And so often, we allow them to be the end in of themselves. Jesus calls us to center our lives on faithfulness to God. Our first call is to faithfulness, who we're supposed to be one with. It shifts the paradigm. And of course, this threatens the systems. It threatens the order we've built that folks want to live in. So is it any wonder that Jesus' faithfulness to God leads to a deep threatening to the systems of the time, and that folks felt threatened enough to want to eliminate Jesus? Whether it's the Pharisees or Rome, Jesus' faithfulness to a power outside of their systems threatens the order. It threatens the security of those in power. People don't like living in chaos and disorder and will often cling to what is clearly not true order or harmony, simply because it feels better to stick with the paradigm than it is to risk chaos. And here's the hard part, I think, as we read and encounter this, that being Jesus' people means that we're people who threaten the system as well. Bryce read in open worship last week from John 16, Jesus speaking to the disciples, "I've told you these things to prepare you for rough times ahead. They're going to throw you out of the meeting places. There will even come a time when anyone who kills you will think he's doing God a favor. They'll do these things because they've never really understood God. And I've told you these things so when the time comes and they start in on you, you'll be well warned and ready for them." Jesus is clear about what threatening the perceived systems of order will result in. But here in Jesus' prayer from John 17, we get a bigger picture. This is Jesus' prayer. "Father, I want those you gave me to be with me right where I am, so they can see my glory and the splendor you gave me, having loved me long before there ever was a world. Righteous Father, the world has never known you, but I have known you, and these disciples know that you sent me on this mission. I have made your very being known to them, who you are and what you do, and continue to make it known, so that your love for me might be in them exactly as I am in them." That sounds a lot like a promise that Jesus will continue to be present to us, that we can trust that Jesus will be about creating order in our lives, even as we live amidst the chaos. We're called to remain and abide in Jesus as a reality of existence, as our order, our harmony. And there's this promise that as we do this, we'll be full of joy and we'll be a joy no one can rob from us. So, Amy and I recently have purchased a boat because we want to do some things for fun, right? Relax, etc. So I took the boat out this week and I got out towards the middle of the lake, and my mom and Derek noticed that the boat was filling with water. So we pull back in, because what you got to do is get it up on the trailer so all that water will drain out of the hole that you left open. This is a boat drain plug, for those of you who don't know. It's a pretty essential piece of boating. Things went from bad for worse for us. We start trying to pull the boat up the ramp, and my mom's in a temporary seat, and we push it a little too hard, and she falls off the seat and into the water, and that was our day on the lake. I'm learning. The encouragement of this is it's not going to be something I'm going to forget soon. But as I got to thinking about this, when we think about our faith life, I feel like this idea of Jesus being present and our security and our sustenance and what directs us is kind of like the drain plug on a boat. If we go out there and try to live life without that, then we're going to have a boat full of water and it's not going to go real well. This is the call, right? We could have this amazing life if we do the work to accept the grace of God and practice living into the reality God calls us to. It's within hours of this prayer that Jesus is put on trial, that Jesus moves towards the crucifixion, that the disciples are dealing with chaos. And yet this is still what Jesus is calling them to. Faithfulness, abide, remain. Be free of these systems that dictate and leave us held back for what it means to be remaining in Christ. So the challenge is clear and in front of us. Are we willing to be people who put the living and present God at the heart of all the ways that we live, at the heart of the systems by which we live our lives? Are we willing to do that not just individually, but corporately? Are we willing to trust that Jesus really is among us and really is guiding us? And maybe the hardest of these questions, are we willing to do that even when we think we've developed a system of living and relating that would allow us to start taking that control back ourselves? So let's take some time to listen. There'll be a couple queries up on the screen, and if those are helpful, please use them. Maybe that Christ brings a message to you today, and if that's true, we ask that you'd be attentive to that. If it's for more than just you, if it's for a friend or a couple other people, please find time to connect with them. And if it's for all of us, please stand and a microphone will be brought so we can hear the message you might have. Let's listen together.